Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show. I'm Kevin Cruz, and in just a minute, I'll be interviewing a CEO about his gift of struggle and why he schedules meetings at weird times like 3 minutes after the hour. But first, I hope you saw all the new stuff we put into the LeadX Leadership Development app. This was all just added in the month of May. 9 new book summaries, including classics like The Oz Principle, The Carrot Principle, and also hot new bestsellers like Marcus Buckingham's new book, 9 Lies About Work. In our webinar archive, we included How to Use Productive Conflict with Leanne Davey. And we put into our curated best podcast shows my recent interviews with Bob Berg and also Gallup senior leaders Jim Clifton and Jim Harder. And yes, the best is being saved for the last. We added 3 new coaching plans for future vision, teamwork, and building trust. Those are 3 critical elements to driving engagement on your team. Let Coach Amanda be your executive coach as you get stronger in these areas, building trust, building teamwork, and instilling a sense of positive future vision. Remember, you can just try it out for free at leadx.org. Now, on to the interview. My guest grew up with parents who immigrated to America without really anything at all. He was one of 13 kids. He joined the Army. He's a proud Army veteran. And today, he's the co-founder and president of the Populous Group. They have over $500 million in annual revenue. He's the author of The Gift of Struggle. It's a book about leadership and the life-changing lessons we learn through our struggles. My guest is Bobby Herrera. Bobby, welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show.
Always a pleasure to connect with a student of leadership, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for being here. And I mentioned pre-show how much I loved your book. And, you know, a question I get often is, you know, my day job is running a company and people are like, when do you find the time to write a book? Why do you write a book? And let me flip that onto you. You're CEO of Populous Group. I mentioned in the intro, $500 million revenue company. You obviously have plenty of things to do every day, a lot of fires to put out. You're not looking for a side hustle here. Right. So why did you want to write this book?
Well, you know better than most, Kevin, that you don't, you know, you make time for things that matter to you. And it was about a 3-year journey. And if someone would have told me several years ago that I would have been writing a book, I would have laughed because it wasn't on my list. And I'm a storyteller by nature. And through that journey, I kept getting encouragement to write the book. And through that part of the process, I finally had a gentle nudge from someone that I'd studied. And that was the call to action that I think I needed. And it was important to me that while I wrote it, I was very true to my value system of not allowing it to interrupt time with my family and time with the community that I've built. So I took my time, and in a sense, I wanted to write a book that I wish I would have had when I was starting my leadership journey. And you know, I was did my best to make it simple, palatable, and in a manner that someone could put it to practical use right away.
That's great. And Bobby, I want to just share for my listeners, I'm not sure if they picked up on it, but you know, I talk a lot about productivity and time. I wrote a book called 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management. And I often boil it down, like you use the word time a lot there, finding the time and everything
sure.
else. But you also said my value system. And right. ultimately that's what it's all about, right? Be clear on our values and then allocate, invest our minutes, our time, our life into the buckets of our values. And you had put, you know, family and business ahead of the book. The book was important. The book was part of your value system, but you were very clear about what trumped that. And I want to make sure everybody heard that because it wasn't just making the time, finding the time to write the book. You were checking it against your other values as well. I think a lot of people can get in trouble when they don't do that. And you talk about stories, the power of stories. you start the book off with telling the story about something that happened to you when you were just 17 years old that ended up sort of changing your life. Tell us that story now.
I was 17, Kevin, and my brother and I were on a return trip home from a basketball game. And along the way, the team stopped for dinner. Everybody unloaded off the bus, except for my brother Ed and I. And so a few moments after the team unloaded, one of the dads to the other players steps on board the bus. And he razzed me a little bit because Ed had outscored me that night. And then he said something to me that I'll always remember. He said, "Bobby, it would make me very happy if you would allow me to buy you dinner so that you and Ed can join the rest of the team. Nobody else has to know. All you have to do to thank me is do the same thing for another great kid just like you on this bus." And I was just overtaken by this sense of gratitude that I'll never forget. And, you know, at that point in my family's journey, like, struggle had been the only constant in our story. And we were well beyond the embarrassment. It was just a fact of life. You know, I'm one of 13 kids. And my mom would make her legendary burritos so that we could participate in sports. And when I stepped off that bus, although I had no idea what I was going to do with my life, after I stepped off, I knew why I had to figure out a way to create something to take control of my story, because that's all I wanted to do, so that I could pay forward that kind act that Mr. Teague had done for me that night. And it just became the invisible force that drove me. It gave me purpose. And it just had a really big impact on me.
Bobby, can I ask, when I think about defining moments in my life, sometimes I kind of know it in the moment or right, thereby. Other times I really don't realize, like, oh, wow, my life really turned 15 years ago when that thing happened. Right. I mean, how much did you reflect on it, like, in the moment or even that year? Or did it take some time to really realize that you were changed from that act of kindness?
I think it was a combination of both. I mean, it was one of those moments that I'll never forget. Like, I've gone back through my mental Rolodex, and for the life of me, I can't remember all the other trips that I had on the way home from a game. You know, I remember glimpses, but there was something about how he made me feel at that moment. And people have often asked me why it had such a profound impact on me. Well, this gentleman, he was a very successful businessman in the community. And I had this narrative in my mind that people like him, they don't notice kids like me. And I wanted to get off that bus more than anything, because all around me, I saw opportunities that others had that my family didn't. That was painfully obvious. But it was the first time in my life that I felt seen. And I just had this sense that, you know, over time, as I've reflected on that moment, I mean, you know this, one of the most important parts of leadership is seeing and encouraging potential. It's like, I had this feeling that, I can do some good in the world. Now, you fast forward over, you know, through my 20s, I was a red-blooded American boy. I made lots of mistakes, and I was far from figuring it out.
Sure.
But I think once I started my entrepreneurial journey, that story was raging like an inferno inside of me.
Yeah. And again, there's so much great stuff just in your answer. You talk about, and I can't remember who originally said it, but, you know, people will forget what you tell them, but they're not going to forget how they make you feel. And you talked about how you felt different, you know, from that trip. And the importance of being seen, as you said, and I've, you know, written about that, it's, I think people don't realize how important that is. And especially if you're in a leadership role at work or in the community, people do want to be seen. And certainly it's powerful to make such an impact, like the way that gentleman made an impact on you. But one of the most common complaints people have about their bosses at work, like when they're doing their, you know, 360 evaluations or something, is they'll say like, you know, the boss never looks at me as she walks past me in the hallway, or I've been working here 10 years and he's never said good morning on Monday morning, you know, and
that's right.
It seems little. And I used to be that bad boss that it wasn't like I was trying to be rude. It wasn't that I didn't care about them, but I was so task focused. I would walk down the hallway thinking about my to-do list or the other thing. And so again, you're the way you just described that, It's an important reminder that even in the little things, I mean, you can make a difference. You can connect with people. You can engage people on your team by literally taking the time to make eye contact, to smile, to say good morning. Let them know that you do see them. You acknowledge them. And you talk about a lot of great stuff about trust being foundational to leadership. And I thought it was funny. You sometimes set some weird times that you'll want to meet. In fact, I'm kind of surprised we didn't set this time for 12:58 Eastern instead of 12:45 Eastern. Tell us about this practice.
Well, I'm a student of leadership, and as I was beginning my journey, Kevin, across from me, I have this row of books, and I call it my Bible row, and I reference it in the book. And early on, a mentor gave me one of them that sits up there, and it's Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. And in there was a subtle technique about how, you know, you set times for your meetings. And I am sure you've been part of a team where if the meeting's set at the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour, someone's always late. You know, they take it up to the buzzer of the previous meeting. And I learned that from that book. But the reason I did it was, as I was building my team, I also started letting the little things slide. And I started setting my meetings and my calls at off hours. Like if you look at my calendar, if I'm the one responsible for setting the meeting, it'll always be at a weird time, 11:02, 1:17. And when I dial the phone and I call the person at that exact time, one, I send them a subtle signal that I do what I say what I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. And the impact that that has over time, it can't be measured. You know, because trust is the single most important asset you will ever own as a leader or as an entrepreneur. I mean, it's arguably the most important part of any brand in America.
It's a great subtle way, as you say, to make the point that when you're working with Bobby, his words and his actions match, you know, down to the minute. And yeah. I'm just curious, I'm looking at my Bible row up here too. Roughly how many books are in your Bible row these days?
Wow. I'd say there's probably about 25.
All right. You beat me. I think I've got just under 20 up there, but I've... And I want to mention it because I know the listeners will be scribbling down to get this book, but you talk about Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, and that's by Vern Harnish,
right.
R-N-I-S-H, also in my Bible row.
It's a great little read.
Great book, especially for entrepreneurs, but everyone could benefit. And then another part that I just really loved about your book, The Gift of Struggle, is the section is Ask Better Questions. And you make the point that... you know, we don't often think about somebody asking a question, but the reality is there's the what of their question, but then unspoken is the why behind it. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, and that chapter was a very difficult story for me to tell, you know, because I set context for that chapter around a very difficult time that my wife and I had with our oldest son. And I wanted to lead that chapter with that story because it absolutely transformed the way I view how I encourage people, how I have in-depth conversations with them. And as I took that lesson and then I translated it to my journey as a leader, I thought I was pretty good at being thorough and listening and all those fundamentals of asking great questions. But where I was missing Kevin, was as I was trying to understand what people were asking me, I was missing the most important part of that dialogue, and that is the emotional connection. Because when someone asks you a question, there's always going to be the what part of it, like the main problem they're trying to solve. However, more important to that is how they as a person are connected to it. And that experience that I had with my son in guiding him better transformed how I started connecting with the people that I served. And more than anything, when someone would ask me a question, I'd say, okay, here's what I hear you asking me. Now, let's take a step back. Why I think you're asking me is because if you don't get this figured out, et cetera, et cetera. And every time that I do that, it's we connect. And I'm creating a little bit more safety with them, because in their mind, they're saying, oh, he gets it. Mm-hmm. And it's a subtle tweak that can make a big impact on the level of trust and understanding that you can build with your team.
And this goes beyond active listening, which is a good practice and been around a while, because I mean, active listening, among other things, you know, says, hey, you know, like stay focused and maybe parrot back what you just heard to make sure you heard them right. But you're even going beyond that and saying, hey, it's beyond that. I care about the emotional thing behind this, the why and the purpose behind this.
Sure.
And you're overt in these conversations. I mean, you'll just come out and say, hey, I think you're asking me this for this reason. Is that right or not? And then you'll have a conversation about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And often in those conversations, like, you know, over time you build more safety with that person you're speaking with. And you know, I've had people say, it's like, yeah, that scares the heck out of me. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, if I'm afraid if we don't get this done, this is going to happen. And when you start having conversations to that level, it's people, they create stronger connection with you. And you know, I think that's one of the best compliments that you can get as a leader is when someone will tell you in the moment that they're afraid of something.
Yeah, that's right.
And that is a massive opportunity for you to create safety with them. Like, yeah. There's nothing more important.
And great things come from that psychological safety. I mean, they'll be more innovative because they're not going to be afraid to fail at, you know, something. They'll try to solve problems without bringing you into it because there's safety there. I mean, it's a great technique that yields a lot. And I guess the final question, you know, related to the book, of course, it's called The Gift of Struggle, and you end the book by saying that we need to invite struggle into our lives. And Bobby, I got to tell you, these last couple of weeks, I felt like I'm struggling just plenty. You know, I'm struggling to hit my sales numbers, struggling to figure out a new lead campaign, falling a little bit behind on some software development. So tell me what you mean. I got to invite struggle into my life.
Sure, sure. Well, let me unpack it just a little bit, because first and foremost, you'd have to be crazy to want to struggle. All right. So I am not walking around inviting it into my life and happy that it's part of my life. However, the reality of it is that anything that we've ever accomplished in life that's worthwhile, we've struggled. And you know, in order to accomplish anything worthwhile, leadership, anything, it's like you have to go through pain, suffering, and struggle to get to wisdom. And in the book, I reference it, the long way is the shortcut. And I just believe it's the single most honest and purest form of progress that we'll ever have throughout our journey. I mean, our own lives begin with struggle. However, around us, it's modeled that we're supposed to mask it. We're not supposed to talk about it. And I was very intentional in the book about breaking down some of those alpha myths, because I bought into them.
Yeah. You know,
I had a really difficult time as an aspiring leader. You know, I thought I had to be the guy that, you know, had his act together. You know, I bought into the alpha myth that the leadership chain is the IQ chain. And, you know, I was wrong. And I'm very open about that. So, you know, our struggles connect us.
That's great. And I want to shift away from your book and actually just ask, what are you most excited about when it comes to the populist group and the goals for this year and beyond?
Yeah, we'll be 17 years old this September. And when I zoom out and I look at that climb, you know, I'm a mountain climber. I use a climbing theme with my community. And I look at it in errors. You know, the first 5 years, I call it the most fun I never want to have again. And then, you know, the second five, it was the holy bleep era. Insert whatever your favorite word is. And, you know, we had some great return on luck. Well, that next era, I call it the era of slow, because I intentionally slowed us down, because in that second era, we started to lose track of the culture and our boundaries and the things that matter if you're going to build something that's special. And now we're in the era of choice. And similar to what we discussed at the beginning, time, right? We get to choose what we say yes to and what we say no to. Well, we're at a real special place, but at the same time, we're only 17 years old. And I often tell my community that in those first 5-10 years, we flunked at least 3 times. So we're just a big 8th grader. And, you know, Kevin, it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but I think I wanted to give you the sense of the fact that we're going to keep leaning into humility. That's very important to us. The industry that we're in, there's a raging war for talent out there, and it's only going to get more intense. So we feel really good about the story that we're narrating. And you know, we really want to be the type of organization that helps others create the type of culture that we have and shares those lessons. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. You know, all the great people at Populous Group, you know, I couldn't have done it without them. And, you know, they're allowing me to get out and share some of these lessons. And it's been an interesting ride. I feel like the best part of our story is just beginning.
Oh, I'm sure. Bobby, where can our listeners find out more about the Gift of Struggle and also the Populous Group?
Well, they can go to my website, and that's bobby-herrera.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn, also on, you know, Twitter and Instagram. I'm new to the social media game. And, I moved to a farm in Portland to lay low, and I kind of messed that up, Kevin. So, but that's at Bobby Herrera PG.
Fantastic. Bobby, thanks for sharing your wisdom, sharing your experiences and stories. We're all going to be better off for it. Thanks for coming on the LeadX show.
Likewise, Kevin. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org. And we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?